All right, so today I am happy to introduce my friend Stephen Weigler. He's an IP protection attorney, and he specializes in IP strategy, and that's why I want to invite him to office hours today to kind of talk about what your options are in terms of trademarks, patents, and basically protecting your IP from unscrupulous Chinese manufacturers who are trying to copy your designs, copy your listings, and that sort of thing. You know, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Stephen.
Well, thanks so much. Good to see you, Steve. Or see you, at least figuratively. Across.
Well, Stephen's actually going to be at the Seller Summit, too. So if you guys have any additional questions, he will be at the event.
Please come and visit me because I'm out in the hallway. And if I'm either playing around on my phone or pacing and just, I'd rather talk to people. So even if you have nothing to say, just come and introduce yourself, please. Keep me occupied. So anyway, again, my name is Steve Weigler. A teeny bit about my background is I come from the business world. And before that, I actually, when I see you down in Miami, I was actually a prosecutor, a state prosecutor down there, prosecuting things like murders, stabbings, all that kind of stuff. So it's been a long road to get to where I am. But I think a lot through my business experience, I was able to learn a lot about intellectual property. And I'm particularly interested in e-commerce and helping entrepreneurs who are at an early stage. My mantra is we have to provide the same quality to spend any money on intellectual property protection. We want to provide the same kind of services so you can actually protect the IP that a large law firm would protect to their much bigger clients. Right before this call, I was dealing with an IP knockoff issue against Walmart. And trust me, they have like 500 attorneys working on their cases. And everything they do is strategic. And so out of the gate, I want everyone to, in this class and otherwise, to think strategically. And what we try and do is provide that at a very low cost point, and mostly with fixed fee. And a lot of times we do it for free. So this is a good opportunity for us to kind of discuss the various areas of IP, the strengths and weaknesses I see for entrepreneurs, and how to protect your IP strategically on the cheap.
Yeah, so I actually solicited a bunch of questions, and a lot of them have to do with patents and trademarks and that sort of thing. And sure. I was hoping, why don't we actually just start this off with just kind of an overview of the different ways to protect your IP and how you and the reasons for doing one or the other sure. first. And then I'll get into like all the questions that were submitted. Sound good?
Sure. Let's start out with the most expensive one and okay. move down cheaper and cheaper. And I hope through doing this, you can see that some areas of IP that we haven't even you guys haven't even really thought about, sometimes provide the same protection as the big boys. So patent is a strategy where you get exclusivity for a certain period of years in exchange for the publication of an invention or an improvement on a previous invention. An improvement on the previous invention would be, for example, an iPhone 10 is an improvement on an iPhone 9. An iPhone 9, and you can go down, is improvement on the Bell telephone. But it either has to be an invention or an improvement on an invention. There's three types of patents. There's plant patents, which I'm sure none of you are particularly interested in. That's for a novel asexual plant. And you see very few of those, but there's patent attorneys out there that do that. And actually I've handled some of those cases. There's design patents, and that patents, for example, a design. So I wrote down an example of one would be the Apple iPhone case. If you guys have bought an iPhone or even a Samsung phone, it comes in a particularly unique looking case that kind of snaps, unsnaps one piece. Steve Jobs writes about, or they wrote it about in the book about Steve Jobs, that he really, that was a very unique design. And so it's design patented. And the most popular and common are called utility patents. That means the utility of your invention has a unique, or the utility of what you created is a unique invention. Now, patents I'm not a patent attorney. And if someone's interested, I kind of vet the idea and figure out if it's cost effective for my clients or anyone who calls me to go to a patent attorney. And I will arrange a patent counsel. The disadvantages to patents are, let's dissect it. You have to have an invention. Most e-commerce startups do not have an invention for patent purposes. They might have a design patent, and we'll cover that a little, but a vast majority of patents filed are utility patents. And most people do not have what it takes to get through the patent process. Now, there's a patent pending process, and we could talk a little bit about that too. But so that's the number one disadvantage. Number two is, I just told you, you have to publish your invention, which is published and readily accessible to everyone in the world, to get that exclusivity. And the exclusivity is only for a period of years. So let's go over an example. Is, I don't know if anyone takes like, anyway, Viagra they just lost the patent on it, right? All of a sudden it's available generically. Well, that's because they only had the patent. I think it was Pfizer. I'm not a user, but I think it's Pfizer, but they only had a patent for a certain amount of years. And then the patent loses exclusivity. So that's number one. You lose exclusivity after a period of years. Number two, it has to be a unique invention. So, and it has to be published. Now, every country in the world has their own patent process. So if you want, and especially if you want to make sure you're not knocked off in some place like China, you might want to contemplate an international patent strategy. So there's the cost of putting together a United States patent strategy and the cost of putting together an international patent strategy, because your invention is going to be published. So go ahead.
How much does it cost and how long does it take? That was one of the questions.
So patents can take, patents to draft a utility patent is anywhere from $6,000 to the sky is the limit. To file a design patent is roughly around $2,000, and I have no idea about an asexual plant.
Okay. What about an international patent?
If anyone's interested, call me and I'll find out. So anyway, it can be kind of cost prohibitive. They're very tedious. You have to list out the invention so it's open and obvious. And if it's not open and obvious, it will be denied. Now, patents are not reviewed by attorneys. They're reviewed by members of that specific expertise. So if you're filing a drug patent, it would be through they would put it through a panel of, or usually one lead examiner that would be that expertise. So it takes a very long time.
When it comes to e-commerce products, especially like the ones that the students are selling, what is your take on actually getting a patent, and when would you absolutely get one?
I have never seen, and I have patent attorneys I work with that will even pay for the patent process and then license it back to the e-commerce seller or whatever seller. And I've never seen one that really has had legs ever. So, and I have 400 IP cases under management right now. It's very rare for a client to have a utility patent. For a design patent, so again, if you feel like your design is unique, then we have to have a discussion on whether trade dress, which is more of the trademark side, or design patent is better, because there's advantages and disadvantages to each.
Let me ask you that question in a different way. If someone infringes on your patent, how much does it cost to enforce it?
Oh my God. That's the other disadvantage I see to the patent process. It is for the big companies, because you have to be able to explain that your invention that you published is unique and they basically stole it verbatim. And there's lots of room for interpretation by the federal courts. And so those cases tend to get stuck in court for very long periods of time. It's very difficult to say, hey, you stole my invention, unless it's really not much of an invention. If it's not much of an invention, it's not worth trying to enforce it. So enforcement, Steve, is not automatic. And because you published it, and a lot of times, like, you didn't create the telephone, you just created improvements to the telephone, they can prove, a lot of times, like the case between Apple and Samsung, they're fighting over, like, was it part of the other ones? And it's taken years and years and years. So generally, patent infringement cases are for the big boys. An advantage of patent, though, on the other side, is if you're seeking to get investment, investors are happy to see that you check the box that you got a patent. And so if you are thinking about a growth strategy that involves outside capital, then it's worth having a discussion with me or another strategist to talk about if a patent's a good idea for you. But keeping in mind that it's going to be a very, you got to pay to play. So if you think you're going to get $10 million in investment, it's probably worth talking about, like, do you have something patentable? If you think you're going to get $100,000 investment, or you're going to flush it all down the drain trying to get this patent, that probably isn't worthwhile to you. Now, another thing I've noticed in my professional career, being a strategist, is that a lot of patent attorneys are glad to write the patent. Like, it's not, it's what they do. They're scientists. You have to be a scientist to be a member of that bar, and they'd be glad to write it for you and see what happens. So it's a pretty narrow focus in the area of IP law.
All right. So it just sounds like, based on the tone, is that for like the small tip of e-commerce stores, filing a patent probably isn't the best use of funds unless you plan on getting outside investment, or unless your product gets to a certain point where it's humongous, right? We're paying all that money in expense.
Generally, I haven't seen it effective in an e-commerce strategy.
Okay.
And I've seen a lot of people call and ask, but generally it's not. We could jump to something real quickly that I
have just one more question on patents before we move on. Can you start selling something and then patent it later?
No, the idea is the invention cannot be published. And so generally it would need to be filed before you roll the product out in market.
Oh, okay. And if you've already started selling it, is too late to get a patent then?
Maybe you could get it through, but it's going to have no enforceable value.
Okay.
And so, you know, a lot of these things make it through sometimes, but then when you, it's not that different than filing a trademark application that really you got it through. But when you start probing at it because you have an infringement issue or something, you can tear the whole thing apart.
Okay.
So all right. You want to have something, it's like building a wall. You can build a wall out of straw, and if someone tries to knock it down, it's pretty easy. Or you can start with a solid foundation. And so my suggestion, if you published and you told them, I didn't know I published, you're supposed to sign an affidavit that you didn't publish. But, you know, if you get it through, you're going to have trouble enforcing it later on.
Okay, that's good to know. All right, so it sounds like patents might not be the best idea. So let's move on.
I think in the right cases, a design patent is not a bad idea. I also think copyright, we'll go over these other things, but they're much cheaper, more effective strategies.
Yeah, can we talk about,
And let's come to trademarks last, if it's okay with you.
Sure, absolutely.
Because I think this kind of leads into, so there are a lot of attorneys, including me, that practice something called alternatives to patent. And so if you have a strategy, if you have a copyright and a little bit of trade secret, it will get you to the same place in court if there's an infringement than a patent will. So copyright protects original works of art. And so that includes music. So everyone maybe knows about Sam Smith got sued by Tom Petty before he died for ripping off his song, Don't Back Down. That's an example of a music infringement case. Well, that netted Tom Petty before he died, $25 million, like a lot of money, patent infringement, because you can go after all the money that they made. I'm sorry, on a copyright infringement. So that's music. Art is art, you know, like a Van Gogh, but also designs of items. So I have one client right now, an e-commerce client. Hi, if you're out there, that has a stuffed animal that has a unique design. And he went and got the, even before I got involved, he got the copyright in the United States. He got it in China. He got it in South Korea. And he got it in India. And for various reasons. The whole internal cost of his organization was about $250 for all the
money. Really?
Yeah.
Before you move on, actually, can you explain copyright? Because I know that there's copyright where you just put copyright like underneath something that you publish versus what you're talking about, which sounds like it's something different, right?
Sure, and I appreciate you jumping in before I go off on a tangent. So copyright protects the work of original art, for lack of a better term, for the lifetime of the person who created it plus 90, they just changed it to 95 years. So when that person dies or that entity dies, it's 95 years from the date of creation. That and there's various laws. What was the question again, Steve?
So there's copyright where you just put copyright down. Like on a blog post, I'll have copyright, blah, 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 versus something you're talking about, which sounds like a more registered copyright.
So copyright itself is guaranteed in the Constitution, in the American Constitution. However, and it's run by the Library of Congress. However, there's been great debate on whether if you just put a C underneath it, if that will give you the same copyrights as if you actually file it with the registry, the copyright registry, which is, again, run by the Library of Congress. And recent case law is saying, no, you don't really, you're not going to get the right to go to federal court if you just put the C on the bottom. So you actually should register it with the copyright office. I mean, for me to do it, it's really, I mean, we're talking like $100, $200. It's really, really.
What does it mean to register copyright? So am I registering a design, like a photo? Am I registering the,
sure.
the
so,
object or?
Sure. You. So for example, let's take the stuffed animal as an example. It has a very unique look and feel. And there's been a lot of movement towards knockoff of it. But you can put together, say you had five stuffed animals. You could put together a compilation, a book, a little booklet, showing each piece of original artwork, meaning the five designs, five different, and you can put it together as a compilation. Or you can submit five different copyright applications. Each copyright application costs $35. Again, they're a little tricky, but not too hard. So that's $35, or you can file a compilation for $55. And then.
So this is a picture book, right?
Right. So you don't have to show, you don't have to send in, say you developed a sculpture that's five stories high. You don't have to send in the actual sculpture because they don't want it. They want just a picture of it. So you can, so it's called a specimen. You just send in a specimen or a, into the depository or deposit.
Okay. And then once you have this registered copyright, if someone produces a physical product that matches the photo in your thing that you submitted, that is infringement?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, everything has a shade of gray, but so none of this, you guys, is we're talking about property that's intellectual property is property that's of the mind. So it becomes very abstract very quickly. But say I had this stuffed animal and it had some unique functions. Like this one has some buckles and things for little kids that are very unique. And say you see a knockoff. What the Supreme Court of the United States has said, you know it when you see it kind of thing. When you see something that's kind of a derivation of that, that's copyright infringement. If it's such a derivation that it becomes a new work, I'll give you an example, is Andy Warhol's use of this Campbell's soup can. Well, that's not, they ruled that's not copyright infringement. That's a complete new work. And so it gets abstract, but for our practical purposes, yes. If you have anything that looks like a knockoff, feels like a knockoff, sometimes smells like a knockoff, then you have a knockoff. And you can get to the same place in court with copyright.
Okay, so...
And protect internationally.
It sounds like this is like equivalent to a patent almost, right?
It is. It's just a different... why don't we call it a different paintbrush in the barrel, in the paint bucket?
Like, is enforcement the same? Like,
you get if you can establish copyright infringement, it's enforceable in federal court. Yes.
Okay.
And the damages are daunting. It can be lost profits. So, for example, say they made $100,000. I'm just making up a number. Let's say they made $100,000 off the copyright copyrighted item. They would have to pay $100,000 back to the copyright holder, plus sometimes attorney's fees, which be quite substantial. A lot of times, copyright is so evident that these cases settle outside of court quickly. It's okay. A lot less abstract than, in my opinion, than arguing over a patent.
So given that this is so much cheaper than filing a patent, it almost seems like this is a no-brainer then, right?
I think so. And I offer it for my clients. I offer it as a free service along if I'm doing the trademark. So I just charge the copyright fee, meaning what the government's charging me.
Right, which is, you said 55 or 35, whatever it was.
Yeah, it's 30. I mean, I would, we won't get into the weeds, but I advocate like filing each one individually, 35, 35, 35.
Right, okay.
Why not? But it's very reasonable. And then we can, the fun thing about it is we can even start talking international strategy because it's so reasonable.
Okay. Right?
So for example, in China, I don't know, my colleague in China, I think she charged, it's a little more. It's like $150, $200 to get a Chinese copyright.
Okay.
And we'll go into why that's important.
So let's quickly get through all of them. Because bottom line, what most of the students here are interested in is basically how to fight the knockoffs and how to prevent people from copying from China, right? So I don't know if you want to go through that now. Maybe all those other things tie into it. But bottom line, there's a factory producing something that looks exactly like what I'm producing. I want it to stop. How can I protect myself?
So number one, we just covered copyright. And a second really important thing is, you guys, this is free advice. It's worth more than free, but it's free for you guys. Is write down everything, write down your suppliers, write down everything that you think is proprietary in your business. And you all have proprietary information in your business. Your margins are proprietary. How you lift your meta tags can be proprietary. Your suppliers are definitely proprietary. All that information is trade secret. And if you keep it secret and write it down and make an agreement with whoever you show it to that it's going to be secret, it's secret. So a combination of trade secret and copyright can be quite effective strategy to prevent knockoffs.
Can you go into more depth about trade secrets? How do you execute what you just said?
Sure. So every state in the United States, I assume the whole audience is American or?
No, actually, but since we're at 7, I imagine that the UK folks are not on, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, so Canada has similar laws. UK is a little different. But in the United States, we have what's called the Uniform Trade Secret Act. And so every state has adopted it. It's except one, I think, like Nebraska. I don't know. One state hasn't. The idea is if you kind of keep the key words in there and say you have an employee staff of 50 and five of them kind of know your secret sauce, those five people, you should get a formal trade secret agreement together. Not for everyone of your employees, but for the five people that are in the know, it's a contractual thing. If you keep some keywords in there and keep that secret, and sometimes we've even got locks and like safes to make it look like it's real secret. And we put the secret sauce in the safes, but we make a big deal about the secrecy of your proprietary information. That can go very far towards a court helping you enforce your trademark issue. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you have to get someone to sign something then basically, right?
Well, you don't for example, Steve, if you and I started a business together, we were 50-50 partners and we were selling dried banana peels on necklaces on Amazon. And we were getting the bananas sourced from somewhere special in Honduras and it had a unique proprietary healing power that we thought had a healing power. Well, if you and I were 50-50 partners, we have fiduciary duties to the company. And as long as we agree to not tell anyone that, then no, you don't have to get anyone to sign it.
Well, but I guess how does the fact, like, do I have to get the factory to agree with this? Or like, how does it work with the factory?
But you guys, one thing about IP is my suggestion is you should know your suppliers. Like you should really test the integrity of your suppliers. Because if your supplier is going to take your product and knock it off, well, that's a lot of times in a different country, right? I mean, it's not, you know, the days of American suppliers are pretty much gone. So we have to look at, you know, what their laws are and what your relationship is with them. And yes, a lot of times you're going to put it in your, sometimes there's provisions in your contract with the suppliers that they won't violate your trade secret and they're subject to American laws. But that's a different.
I guess trade secret thing still isn't clear to me. Sure. So I'll write down all my trade secrets, blah, 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 in a document. But let's say someone else in the U.S. decides to knock off my product and sell it. Like, is just writing this all down a piece of paper good enough? I mean, like, do you file it somewhere? Like, where do you file it?
No, you don't have to. That's the beauty of it. If you have it contractually and an acknowledgement that it's trade secret and it does seem proprietary.
A contract with who, though?
With, well, you can either take, if it's, again, let's go back to the banana peel. If it's you and me, and
well, let's say it's just me and then someone else, random, who I don't know, is knocking off my product. How does this trade secret thing help?
For this particular type of intellectual property protection, but they shouldn't be able to know how to knock off your product because you've kept a lot of it secret.
Okay, I see. So, but if they somehow found my manufacturer.
Yeah, and they persuade the manufacturer to violate whatever trade secret terms you have in the manufacturing agreement, and or you found one without integrity, which happens, then there's other things we would need to do. Trade secret is not gonna help.
All right, so it sounds like this trade secret thing is only helpful when you have a contract with someone who knows your secrets and then someone else, and that person violates it somehow, right?
Correct. The idea is, opposed to publishing it like patents, you have to publish your ideas. These are the exact opposite. You keep it secret. Okay. And anything you're releasing, you have some other kind of intellectual property protection.
And then the cost to do this is essentially just the cost to draft a contract.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is form. The hard part is putting in, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff. Like, what is proprietary? And, you know, if you're going to say, well, I priced the product at $15. Well, everyone can see it's priced at $15. The court's not going to enforce that.
Right. Are you allowed
one
to
more
copy
thing if I could say about that is, again, if you're seeking to get investment, you're going to want to make a big deal about your trade secret because investors like to see that you have some secrets that you're not releasing to the general public.
Okay. Can you copyright your Amazon listings and photos, or does Amazon own everything?
Amazon, you could copyright the way you write the listing. You could use the Amazon listing as a specimen or what you're going to deposit, but you couldn't copyright that whole Amazon screen, if that makes sense.
Because I vaguely remember an Amazon's contract saying, like, they own everything once you upload it, like the photos, everything.
They probably... So that's called terms of use for sellers. They probably do, but they can't. You could most likely trademark your meta tag. I'm sorry, copyright your meta tags and copyright your how you do your listing.
That's interesting. Okay. So I could take that verbiage and I could file a copyright and then use that. And I can go, hey, Amazon, someone's copied my listing. Look, I have the copyright registered for it.
Yeah, I don't think that would go too far with Amazon, but you could. Yeah.
But you don't think it would go too far with Amazon?
No, you know, I mean, here's the thing about Amazon, guys, is they're a private company. They're not a judge. They're not an arbiter. And so they, as much as they try sometimes, they can do what they want. So if they, I've had, you know, clear takedown things that should have been taken down and they don't. And some things, sometimes I have things that are questionable and they take it down. So it's just like, it's luck of the draw with them. So if you filed something like, hey, the way I describe my good and service is copyrighted. It's usually good. The way I describe my good is copyrighted. You have to take it down. Maybe. I mean, it's a good argument.
Well, let me ask you this question a different way. What is the best way to take down someone who's copying your pictures and your listing exactly on Amazon?
Well, the thing that's going to get their attention most is if you follow the Amazon rules, which has a lot to do with the brand registry. And so if you're not a member of the brand registry 2.0, yeah, I mean, it happens. Yeah. If you can establish it, but a lot of times the best takedown is going to be a trademark takedown.
Okay. So are we ready to segue into trademarks yet, you think?
Sure.
Or is there
So just one last thing is the combination of copyright and trademark is what we call alternatives to patent. So trademarks protect your brand. So it protects sometimes the name, but it also can protect any literal element or any element of your product. So it can protect. So let's go through the least obvious ones. Like, are you guys familiar with like HBO, how it, before you watch HBO, a show, it goes, or I'm thinking of NBC where it goes da da da.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all, that's trademark. The Coca-Cola bottle, if we can picture the original Mexican Coca-Cola, you know, that teardrop look, that bottle is trademarked. It's not patented. It's the look and feel is trademarked because it's holding out trade dress or visual element of a brand. So that's another way to protect a good or a service under trademark. The third way is a logo. So all your artwork on your website. So say you're doing a Shopify site and you have a very unique look and feel to that Shopify site. That can all those design elements can be trademarked. The fourth thing is the obvious one, the name. And that's what Amazon, they will take design marks now, as long as there's what's called a literal element or a name in it. So those are the four areas of protection or what trademark protects. Here's the challenges of trademark. They're reviewed by an examining attorney. Unlike patents and copyright, there's actually an attorney. Copyright, there's some attorney, but they're looking at thousands and thousands of files. In trademark, they look at it very carefully. So you always are filing with an examining attorney. There's 45 classes of goods and services. So the first 35 are goods. The last 10 are services. So marks 1 through 35 are goods. Numbers 36 through 45 are services. And so you have to classify it in the right category. Otherwise, it's meaningless. So for example, if I were selling glass vases and I put it down in a metal category, well, number one, I'm not going to be able to enforce it because I never made metal vases. Number two, non-enforceable, and it probably is going to get challenged somewhere down the process because there's an examining attorney. The second challenging thing about trademarks is there's a lot of strategy involved. There's a lot of rules. It's almost like playing chess because you're going to want to, for example, if I'm doing glass vases and I want to build a company, the chances of me just doing glass vases in the next 10 years and making a living doing it are pretty minimal. And so I'm going to want to think that all out before I file the trademark application. I might want to go into glass vases and metal vases and flowers and trees. And maybe, I could go on and on and on to all the things I'm going to use this brand for. And you're going to want to think that out before you file the application. Sure, you can file subsequent applications, but what you get is a record date. And all that matters in trademark is who uses it first. So if you use it first, you get what's called a record date. And so you're going to want to establish that, hey, I'm going to use it for these certain services, these certain goods, metal vases, but I'm currently using it for glass vases. And that's all involves a huge amount of strategy, which is why there's so many trademarks.
Does each category require a different application?
No, you can file. So each category requires a different fee. Each category is $275. And so you could file it in all 45. I've never seen anyone do that. But, you know, I was just looking at a Walmart grill. They do grills under their brand name, Grill Master, and they did it under 15 different categories because they had grill forks, grill pads, grills, grill grates. All those were different categories.
Sorry, did you say grill? 275 per category or just
yeah.
Per category?
275 okay, per category.
Okay.
Now, the other thing about trademarks is once you get, we all talk an international language. So if I'm working with a trademark attorney in China, we can talk together, assuming we know some other words together, like they speak a little English, we can talk the same language because those categories kind of, that's our code. That's our language on how to enforce internationally. So if I said you have a trademark in, for example, IC23, which I'm just guessing is glass, I could call the international attorney and say, hey, we have an infringement issue in China, or we want to file this application in China under IC23, here's what we're describing it as, translated into Mandarin or Chinese, and we'll go from there. So it's an international language, and it's enforced through something called, not that your audience needs to know this, but it's enforced through something called the Madrid Protocol. So we all, the whole world talks the same language on trademarks, which is fun.
All right. So when it comes to trademarks and protecting your product, what do you recommend here?
I recommend, that's a really good question. My mantra is maximum amount of protection, minimum amount of price. One category, one filing. Get as much as you can into that filing quick as possible. And don't do it on the fly. Really think out this application. Because every word you put down on that application means a lot. And when you have issues of infringement, someone knocking off your trademark, which is, keep in mind, it's not just the words, it's your entire brand. They're ripping off. They're trying to connect their products under the brand you created. If you don't have that trademark application right, it's as good as not doing it. Like, you might as well have not done it. At least you don't have a paper record of how you screwed it up. So we have a lot of those. Like, I have one right now. They said they have a Windows company. Well, they're a Windows services company. They don't make Windows. So if you file under the wrong category, then they tried to enforce it against my client. And we said, well, you don't make Windows. So they filed it wrong. And that's an experienced attorney. And so they have no trademark protection. So it's very intricate, very tricky to file the application right. But don't file often, file once, and file deliberately and really think.
Like, so for example, you could go and try to do this yourself, right? For $275. What are the disadvantages? Like, it's unclear to me what filing it the right way really means here, or what you really mean by that.
Sure. So the important things in an initial trademark filing are, number one, are the kiss of death applications, meaning you're screwed before you get out of a plate, is you have to do a really thorough search. And that a lot of times is not on the USPTO website, to find out if anyone else has used any iteration of the mark in a category that's remotely close to yours. And so if you file it wrong and you get a likelihood of confusion refusal with another mark, you can't change that. Your brand is dead. And so, I mean, sure, an attorney, or I guess you could if you really got lucky, but, you know, we're trained to do a search to make sure that the brand clears so you don't get a likelihood of confusion. Another issue is descriptiveness, or geographic descriptiveness. Like, I have a client that's used the word American. Well, American describes the United States. And so how do you get over that descriptiveness? American goods, but then you have American Eagle, you know, that's doing just fine. So if you have a mark that's remotely descriptive, describing your goods or services, or has common names in it, it's going to be very difficult to write that application to get over the hump. Another thing is, if you categorize the goods wrong, so if you put it in one category that's not the right category, you're going to get denied, and you lost $275, plus you have a record of all the ways you screwed it up, and it's going to be difficult to refile that again. There's just a ton of ways you can make mistakes. There's 145 questions. You don't have to answer them all. On them. If you file something that's a trademark in a foreign language, it might get, has a meaning in a foreign language, you're going to run into issues. So there's a whole bunch of technical ones also that I won't go into. They're boring.
But in terms of enforcement, like, once you manage to get it registered, let's say, it sounds like the major things that will prevent you from enforcing is if you put in the wrong category.
If you put in the wrong category, if you put in the wrong goods or services, if there's been confusion, if someone has so trademark is all about it's not who's first to file, it's who's first to use. So if someone didn't file a trademark and you have a trademark application and they can establish that they were the first to use the trademark, they can sue you in federal court even though you have a trademark. So that search becomes, you're not like out of the water just because you got a trademark.
Okay.
So that's a lot of what we run into.
I see.
So search means everything, and you need someone to interpret the search.
Right. Plus, so the main value add to hiring someone to do it as opposed to doing it yourself is essentially the search portion and the categorization.
The search portion, the categorization, the answering, there's about I don't even know how many. There's a lot of technical things that come up. So answering all those technical questions, it's making sure that no one, when the mark publishes, because it publishes to the public, that it gets through the publication period without issues. And then it's reminding the trademark applicant that when renewal dates come up and tracking.
The reason why I'm asking all these questions,
sure,
is because to get into Amazon Brand Registry 2.0, you need a trademark, right? And right now the general attitude is, hey, I'm just going to get this trademark just so I can get Brand Registry 2.0. Like, I don't care how I do it. I just want it. I know for a fact that most people don't think about these things that you're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they come up when they come up, and they come up in a big way. It's like you might dodge a bullet and you might get on the brand registry. There might be issues if someone's trying to infringe against your brand, and there might not be. There's been times where the brand registries refuse the trademark because it's the wrong category, or it's the wrong. Actually, I've had ones where it's the wrong trademark. Like, they didn't trademark the right part of their brand. That can become an issue. There's times where people have been suckered into by the trademark office. Just put it on the supplemental register. And you put it on the supplemental register, and then you can't get on the brand registry because right. The brand registry doesn't take supplemental registry. There's times where the brand's hidden in a logo that the brand registry won't take it. So you want to do a very deliberate, my philosophy is for very little more than I would, I don't, trademark attorneys don't make very much money on these types of services. Where we make our money is when people screw this all up. And where do you think, honestly, it's where we're when we're on the defensive, when we're just doing an international search, the reason my services cost, I think you'll share this, but it's $875. Almost $300 of that I pay Thomson Reuters to do a thorough national and international search that you can't do on the USPTO website to make sure that we don't run into these issues later on down the road. It's a huge
problem. International, you mean?
International and national.
Oh, and nationally. So yeah, the USPTO website is not good enough.
No, in my opinion, it's not even close. So, and they're not just looking at that either. So that's an example of a false sense of security, thinking that you're just going to.
What's an example of that? Like, if I do a search in the USPTO website and I don't see anything, like, what could possibly come up?
Okay. So let's think of I have a mark called, this is a services mark, but say I have a mark called Tutor Pros.
Okay.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head. And say there's a mark that comes up called Evolve Tutor. The trademark office might see, because of the way you classify the goods or services, might see a confusion between your mark and that mark. Searching between Tutor Pros and, what did I say? I forgot the other one. Anything with Tutor in the second part. That is not going to be something that you or I would be able to find on the USPTO trademark website at all. And you need an expert opinion on all those iterations. You'll need to be able to look at the mark 365 degrees. You can see why you're an engineer and I'm an attorney. 360 degrees. You have to be able to look at, you know, whether the second word competes with the first word. And that happens a lot. You know you're in trouble when a lot of times when I get involved on the defensive, it says on the bottom of the office section, please contact a licensed trademark attorney. So that happens a lot. So, you know, the trademark examiners get frustrated dealing with pro se. But sometimes, again, if you have a really easy mark and you made up the name, like Exxon made it up for oil, and they have oil, well, that would be a pretty easy one because it's a made-up name. If you think, and you type in the made-up name, and if the made-up name doesn't pop up, the chances of getting it through are pretty good. But most of us use descriptive words in our listing.
So there was a student that asked this question. Like, let's say a whitewater rafting company had the trademark Red River Outlaw, and you wanted to name your company, which also sells whitewater rafting products, Outlaw Outfitters. Could there be a potential for infringement there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the problem. And sometimes it's like looking at, like, I see your wall in the background. It's like looking at working with the examining attorney up that says shade of yellow or if that's an off-white. And that's the granularity you get into. And then we sit around and read all these, what's called the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, all their decisions to figure out if that's a shade of yellow or off-white. And we have to argue that to them. And again, if you wrote it and I'm getting involved at the last minute, you know, meaning you filed it, right? Well, there's a lot I have to undo. And so I just would say your brand is cost-benefit analysis. Again, this is not, this is like a loss leader, but you're much better off working with an attorney with all these arcane rules at the very get-go to know what issues you're going to have. The other issue is, again, the international piece, and we can go a little into knockoffs.
There's a couple things I still want to cover. So one is sure. The knockoffs. Like, how do you stop them in China from being made? What should we have in place to actually stop that from happening? And then how do we actually enforce that?
Sure. This has all been experiential learning for me because, again, I'm not Chinese. But this is becoming the issue of the day. More so last year was kind of like, okay, brand registry, how do you get through that? This year is all about Chinese knockoffs. So here's the scheme, and here's what's happening in China. They see your product at a trade show, or they're policing, you know, not policing, but they're looking at Amazon or Shopify or however they're looking at it. Or they're seeing, they have some connection to the manufacturer you're working with in China, unfortunately, sometimes. They're seeing the product, and they are either the manufacturer's, you know, doing two runs, one for you and one for the general public, or, you know, someone sees it and manufacturing, there's a lot of manufacturers in China. And so then they're either shipping it out themselves to distributors in the United States, which I don't know the answer to this, if they're doing that, but a lot of times they're going to Alibaba because that's a general site for wholesalers. And they're listing the product basically a lot of times with your name. Like, it's just sitting right there. Your product, your design, call it a patentable design or a copyrighted design, your name, trademark, not trademark, it's sitting there. Then someone buys it, then a lot of distributors buy it either knowingly or unknowingly and distribute it in the United States. And I've seen Canada lately and the UK. So what do you do? Well, sure, we can have a strategy in the United States, and that's important. And I think a lot of what we covered is a strategy in the United States. Another way, an important way to do it is when you're contemplating your American filing, we should also be looking at the possibility of getting a Chinese trademark, potentially a Chinese copyright application. By doing that, two things. Once you have the register in hand, and I think for the copyright, it takes like 3 months. They're more efficient in China than we are in our system. But they, once you get that in hand, we send in a Chinese IP attorney to do some virtual door knocking. So they call the factory, that the factory is never thinking that this is going to happen. They call the factory and read the Riot Act, or sometimes we can figure out who the knockoff manufacturer is, read the Riot Act, and we get actually a transcript of that so we can see what it looks like in English. And magically, a lot of this stuff goes away.
How much does this cost?
To where it's been about $800.
What? That's it?
Yeah, it's cheap. So again, all the strategies, guys, besides the patent strategy, are affordable. And that's, again, my business mantra. It's like, we want to provide the same quality of services that a large law firm, international law firm does at rock bottom prices, because again, it's not a mystery to us. But, and you know, again, none of this, I could tell you all these strategies and not, there's a chance that this is all difficult to police sometimes. But, you know, again, we're trying to do it incrementally and offensively, as opposed to sitting there and waiting, screwing it all up, and then being on the defense, and that becomes very expensive. So it's the door knocking service I've seen is about $800, including the copyright filing, and including a lot of times the trademark filing too. So it's very reasonable. The other thing is that once you have that in hand, you can take down an Alibaba. So you just took it down at the source. So why wouldn't you? So I've been working effectively with Chinese consul that's actually based in San Francisco. So she's the consul I work with speaks English. She calls over to her Chinese counterparts and they get it done. And in China, you can do it with the paralegal. So it's even more cost effective because obviously paralegals in China are cheaper than attorneys here.
So let's say someone on Alibaba is just stealing all the images from my site and posting them on Alibaba. Do I actually have to register the copyright for all those images and then have it taken down, or?
Because I'm not a Chinese. I've seen that they're pretty, we always, in IP, we always work with, minimum, maximum amount of protection, minimum amount of price. The whole idea is like, we lay it all out and usually we can get one or two images and that will take care of it. So if it's the same thing and you're just doing multiple images, no, one image, that would take care of it. If we're talking about multiple products, well, we have to do a little bit of artwork to try and, or, you know, craftsmanship to try and get the maximum amount into your file. So we spend as little, but it's just, it's not, the price is actually mostly the analysis. But again, if you're calling them and you're like, wow, I never did an international search. I'm called Smith Toys and I never did an international search to find out if that's taken in China. And then you find out after you're being infringed upon that you never even could get the trademark in China because no one ever did the search, which is what we're doing in the beginning. If you're working with me, then you have a problem. Then we have to rebrand in China. I mean, my God, it's going to take forever and it's going to cost a lot more than $800.
Let me ask you a question here. Let's say you have the trademark in the US, but someone else has the trademark in China. Are you pretty much screwed in China?
That happens a lot, actually. There's workarounds. Again, I'm not a Chinese attorney, but I've had so many cases that I've been working with Chinese counsel. There's workarounds and there's ways. Sometimes we use the door knocking service because they will, and I'm not picking on China because it happens other countries too, but they are a first to file type of country. So people will see your trademark on Amazon, new listing, and go and copyright and trademark into China. And then you're screwed because you weren't the first to file, they were. So,
right.
You know, sure, you can go to, I think it's called the intermediate court. Like you can go to this court, but you're not going to go on. You're an American business person in with an e-commerce business. That's the last thing you want to do, spend money on it. So, you know, again, we want to know all this at the get-go. We want to take quick prophylactic action that's cheap as opposed to waiting.
The reason why I asked that question is once they have your trademark, they could, in theory, just create products with that trademark and then sell them.
Have a lot easier time. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, again, there's every country. That's what's nice about trademark law, because we speak an international language. Patent does this too. But because we speak an international language, the laws are pretty much the same. So if they commit fraud against the Chinese trademark, the Chinese IP office, well, that's fraud. And same here. If you're filing a trademark to get rid of somebody and you're never going to use the goods or are knocking off the goods, well, that's fraud. But good luck trying to prove that. That's an expensive, not in the hundreds of dollars, in the 10th. That gets up to patent. Like, that's very expensive. So, you know, then it becomes a game. So let's talk about like later stage infringement. Then it becomes a game of chicken. You can't, again, that's part of our business strategy is to use the same techniques that large law firms or, you know, big international companies use. And one way is never back down if you have a good claim. Like, you have to hang in there tough, you know, cheap shortcuts to get to where you need to be. But you really need to be strong in enforcing your market. Because, Steve, the more successful, and you know this from your brand, the more successful you get, the more people are going to try to knock it off. It's not that they're sitting around waiting for like something like you have a new paperclip company and it looks like the, you know, the kind you can get at Home Depot or Office Depot. It's more like when you become successful that you have a knockoff issue. And then you have that's when your issues become bigger and you might as well have that covered at the very get-go, because again, you're investing your time and money into something. You know, I don't think any of your students are doing this because they don't think it's going to be successful. Like, might as well do your homework. Again, I can help you. I answer, if you just want to call me, I answer any questions for free. Like, just, again, my philosophy is I'm going to establish my value at a much lower price point than a lot of other people. But it is sophisticated work.
I don't know if you can answer these questions. I'm just running down to make sure we cover them all here. It's an Amazon question. Like, lately, students have been running into problems where dirty Amazon sellers actually report their product as counterfeit to take down the listing. Is there any way to fight that, or have you ever had to deal with anything like that?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay.
Amazon and eBay have been pretty responsive. You know, again, the stronger the letter can be and the more evidence of fraud, the quicker they're going to react. So a lot of times, and how you can work effectively, I'm not saying you can't do that yourself, but how you can work effectively with an attorney and save a lot of money is get the facts together, email it to, and we'll put together a quick letter that will usually get that item resolved. You know, again, they not only do they know what you're saying, but they know, they can see traffic. They can see where this is all coming from. They can, just like a credit card company can tell, you know, hey, I just went to India and the credit card worked because they could tell that was my flight was to India. You know, they can tell that kind of stuff. So,
okay. These are just some more specific questions regarding trademarks. Let's say you had a trademark on a logo, but you turn that logo into a physical product. The trademark protects that, right?
Yeah, because you would file the trademark in the category of the product. A logo itself isn't a good or a service. Trademarks protects goods or services. So assumably you're putting that on a good, or for example, Seller Summit is a service.
Right. But let's say Bumblebee Linens, like my little bee, let's say I trademark that, but then I turn that into a stuffed animal. Is that...
Then we'd probably want to put it in an additional category. It depends. We might not have to. But it's going to protect, say you trademarked it as a... I'm just spacing it. It's late. I'm just spacing on a category. But say it's 25. And say stuffed animals are toys. That's a different category.
Okay. So I would need it in that category.
But you might be protected because the standard doesn't look at categories. It looks in the consumer's mind. And I think under that scenario, you'd probably be protected. And I wouldn't advocate filing another trademark application.
Okay.
So a lot of times you are, but that's another thing is like, you want to run that by somebody, because a lot of times I'm going to advocate, yeah, it's a different product, but it's kind of in the same line of commerce. It's stupid to file another trademark application. It depends, I guess, is the answer.
Can you trademark a method, like a way to tie the rope when you're hanging like a rope shelf?
Excellent question. We've been doing that. Yes. So methodology is usually because you're educating somebody. It's an educational service is how I do it. And it's been very effective. Examples are like Dale Carnegie method of...
Is that a trademark or a patent?
Trademark.
Trademark. Okay.
So again, yeah. And one other thing to mention, just jumping all around, but patents, if you have a software play, patents are very difficult to get the software patented right now because of a Supreme Court ruling. And the courts are vetting that out, but... If you have software, stay away from patent unless you want to spend a lot of money. That's a generalization. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah. Okay. So we've already been chatting for like an hour, and I know it's getting late for you out there. Just to kind of sum this up, at least what I got out of this from you is that patents probably aren't the best way to go for what we do, for what we sell, for example. And trademarks with copyright registration plus trade secrets are probably as good, if not better, than a patent at a fraction of the price.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And think before you act.
Right. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about the services that you offer. I know you do trademarks and stuff. I remember you showed me this slide, but I can just post it.
So my email is sweigler@emerge.com. Consult with an S, consel.com. Email me or call me, and I'm glad to answer any questions free of charge. We do a free knockout search, which is kind of studying, do you have any chance of getting this trademark? And we do that for free, because if you don't have a chance, we might as well tell you up front.
Okay.
And so that's the first service we provide. I do what's called I have a total TM product line and package, which includes all the things we basically talked about at one low flat fee, which is a lot of strategic discussion. It's how to, you know, the placement of your mark, the placement of your brand, how talking about how you think you're going to grow the brand, and then memorializing that into hopefully one trademark application in one category, doing an international and national search, identifying any issues you might have both nationally and internationally. If there's an international issue, identifying appropriate counsel that has the same practice philosophy as I do. The search, giving you a search opinion and letter, which is, again, you want counsel to do that. Filing the application, answering all non-substantive office actions, a very discounted fee on office actions that are going to take me days and days to write. And if that ever happens, keeping track of your trademark and letting, more importantly, if you guys want to, a very important thing right now is if you want to get on the brand registry, do you want to sit around and find out you have an issue and then have to deal with it? Or if you do it right, and we have software that monitors every filing every day. And if anything changes in the status of the trademark office, we get it to you. So the day you get the registration number, we get you the registration number. You're on the brand registry that much quicker. And that's included all in the flat fee. And answering any questions you guys have pretty much about my business services, or like if you have a business question or a trademark question, that's all included in the flat fee, as long as you don't take up too much of my time. So it's $875. And if there's infringement, we can talk about that. All that is included. It's just a flat fee. Because what's tended to happen is I've become more than just the guy who filed your trademark.
Right,
a trusted partner. And that's what I'm looking for in a client. I don't care if you're a tiny business or a really large business. It's just, my kind of mission in my practice. And then the trademark filing fee is $275. Copyright filings are included in that fee. That's a special feature to my to your people. Sometimes I charge for it, but it's really easy for me to do. And I'm identifying it through the same process that I am, the total TM process. And it's mostly paralegal work. And then we're identifying the IP strategy. So you have a strategy as you grow. Again, none of your students are thinking that this is just a one-off, hope it makes it, hope it doesn't. They're putting their lives into it. And we want to create a strategy that does the same.
Okay.
And you guys, again, please stop by. Again, I am a bit of an extrovert sometimes. So if I'm going to sit there, I'd much rather be talking to people than sitting there.
Yeah. So if you guys are at the event, hop on by.
Free knockout search right at the event. I'm going to have internet. We'll just do it up.
All right. So cool.
We'll even go deeper than the knockout search if you guys want to.
Cool.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot, Steven.
Pleasure. Take care now. Take care.